From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. The term singer-songwriter can be a bit nebulous. After all, many singers write their own songs, and many songwriters also step up to the microphone. So what makes you an artist in both categories? It's a term that's hard to define, but as the old saying goes, you know it when you hear it. Today's guest is most definitely a singer-songwriter, and she's been firmly in that camp for decades. Mary Chapin Carpenter, who has a shelf full of Grammys and multiple platinum albums, joins me today just a couple days before her show at the Hayden Holmes Amphitheater in Bend. With hits like Down at the Twist and Shout and He Thinks He'll Keep Her, Carpenter is a luminary in the American folk genre, and she's bringing her signature voice to Central Oregon. Our conversation is next on Oregon on the Record. Multiple Grammy award-winning singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter is playing with Rhiannon Giddens and Mavis Staples this weekend at the Hayden Holmes Amphitheater in Bend, and I had a chance to chat with her today and talk about her career, why she keeps making music, and why she loves making connections and community through that music. Five-time Grammy award-winning singer-songwriter and performer Mary Chapin Carpenter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with this. Tell us about the show coming up this weekend in our community in Bend, Oregon.
Well, when I heard from my manager that Rhiannon Giddens had reached out to see if we would be interested in being a part of these shows, I was just so excited. In Bend, it will be, of course, Rhiannon and her wonderful band, and then the great, the legend, that is Mavis Staples. And then Hooray for the Riff Raff, a band that I have loved for a very long time. So doing these shows feels very dream come true-ish.
Well, in the title about Lift Every Voice and Sing, what does that mean to you?
Oh, gosh. I don't think we have a long enough time in our interview window. But I think it's pretty plain speaking, you know, lift every voice and sing. I think it's about the importance of music in community. For that matter, music and art, the things that lift us up, the things that allow us to feel connected to one another. And just speaking very plainly about lift every voice and sing. I'm sure you've had this experience. I'm sure your listeners have had this experience. But when we find ourselves with other people in situations where we are singing together, it's a powerful feeling. It's powerful. It's profound. It's emotional. It's redeeming. It's inspiring. And those words, I can go on and on with positive words like that. But I think in the times that we are living in these really, really difficult, polarizing times, I need this personally. I need this and I want it. And so that's what it means to me briefly.
You know, you've basically done everything there is to do in your storied music career. What appeal does touring still have for you?
It's about being together with other people. I mean, I could sit in my, well, here's an example. During the pandemic, I was home at my home for almost 2 years without seeing other people, other than through a camera, a Zoom, whatever. And I started doing this, like many artists that I knew, I started doing a little sort of video series, a very, very informal video series called Songs from Home, where I would just literally set up my iPhone camera, because that's all I had, in different rooms around my house once a week, twice a week, and play a song, you know, film a song being played. And then I'd write a little blurb about what the song was about, and then, you know, what books I had read that week and what I was watching on television and thinking about on my walks and that sort of thing. If anything brought home, there's nothing like a pandemic to bring home the truth that to to do that, yes, you can do it through a screen, but it's never going to be the same thing as being together with people in a live music situation. And there's never going to be a substitute for that in my mind. And so it fills your emotional tank, it fills your inspiration tank, it fills all the things that makes us human here in our brief time on this earth. And so that's a very long-winded answer to your question as to why do you keep touring? It's like, but it's like, this is what I do. It's what makes me happy. It's what brings me joy. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no deadline or sort of shelf life to those feelings.
Yeah. You do a lot of collaborations too. You collaborated with the Mountain Goats. Is that kind of the same sort of feeling? Is to join with other musicians and see what kind of product, what kind of magic you can make?
More so now than ever before. When I was starting out, and I've been doing this, as you say, a very long time, and you're just working towards trying to get to the next place, literally and figuratively. But in the life that I've been able to create for myself now in the last few years, it's very exciting to work with other people and to see what comes along. I loved working with John and the Mountain Goats on the sort of one-off that we put out a few months ago. And then before that, last year, I put out a record with my friends Julie Fowlis and Corinne Polwart. They're two legendary Scottish singer-songwriters and artists. And that was something that was, oh my gosh, and Josh Kaufman of Bonnie Light Horseman and so many other projects, he produced it, and we recorded it over in England at Real World Studios. And that was just an experience that was dream worthy. It was so much fun. And it just feels like a privilege at this point in time to be able to join with other people. And I feel like also every time you have a chance to work with other people, no matter how informal the setting, you learn things. You learn how to be a better musician. You learn how to be a better writer. You learn things. And I like to believe that no matter how old we are lucky to get, that we never stop learning. That's the joy and the reward of doing this.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to 5-time Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, and performer Mary Chapin Carpenter. My wife and I, one of our favorite albums is Stones in the Road. And I was thinking back before knowing I was going to talk to you, because we'd listen to that album, and a lot of times we'd listen to it and discover new things about a song. And that leads to my question about this, which is, what's the difference between writing a song and telling a story through music?
I don't know if there's that much of a difference at all.
Okay.
Quite honestly, I mean, I haven't really, I'd have to ponder that a little bit, Michael.
Okay.
And so in the time that we have, I don't have that much time to ponder it, but I'm just thinking, it's like, I think in general, I don't think there's a whole lot of daylight between those two things.
Okay.
Yeah.
As we've said, you've been doing this for a long time, been very successful, and you've entertained multiple generations of fans. What is it about your music, but also American folk, that appeals to people who are listening to you in the late 80s, early 90s to today?
What is it that appeals to people who have listened that long? Is that your question?
Actually, it's the people who first discovered you, like I did back in the early 90s, but also younger people today who are rediscovering you.
Well, I don't know if I'm the person to have the perspective on that. I'm just going to speak for myself. When I am moved or taken with someone's music, when I discover somebody new or whatever, it's just, we speak to different things in each other. I don't know why or how I find certain artists that just make me swoon. you know? But you just know, you know? I mean, and, you know, on the other side of that, you know, I'm sure everyone has heard someone say at one time, you know, you can't dance for everybody in the room. You have to, it doesn't, you can't appeal to everyone. That's just not possible, really. So somehow, when you do connect with someone, a listener, it just, to me, it's always just felt like a beautiful gift. And actually, I say this a lot, but this is true. You know, when somebody comes up to me and they, I mean, I have friends, we love sad songs, for example. You know, just the sadder the better. And you know, when someone comes up to you and says, "Oh, X song, it was blah 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 song. I love that song, but I gotta tell you, it just makes me cry." And when someone says that to me, I like just want to embrace them and say, "Oh, I'm so glad." You know, that's great. The sadder, the better. You know, it just allows us to be human and allows us to respond and allows us to feel things. And, you know, that can sound all very woo-woo to people, but to me, it's that's just that's part of the that's part of what it's all about. It's just it's allowing ourselves to feel things.
I want to talk quickly about your last album, Personal History. I read a review, and one of the things that the reviewer wrote was, you know, it's authentic, written from deep in the heart. You know, and I think your songs, they're pretty vulnerable. What's that like to be a songwriter? And I'm not saying it's everything's autobiographical, but I mean it's you express a real vulnerability in your music, and is that a challenge?
No, I don't think it's a challenge. I think it's just the way I've always regarded the practice of songwriting, in that you're telling true things. It's not, you know, people talk about art of any medium, any kind, as being often cathartic or illuminating. I think of songwriting, for example, as this, as a lot of the time, sort of excavating emotions and helping me figure out my place in the world, if you will. It just, it's, I don't think that vulnerability is anything but an asset. You know, I think it's necessary to do what we do.
Yeah. Two last questions for you. You've
Yes.
succeeded as a woman in the music industry, but I imagine there have been challenges. Talk about what you've had to overcome, and I don't know, do you think the industry has gotten more accessible for women from when you first started to today?
Oh, again, I think this is a conversation that could go on much longer than we have time for. But yes, I mean, gosh, you know, I've run up against sexism, ageism, a lot of isms, you know, over the years. I mean, I think if I've been doing this as long as I have, it would be, you know, false to say that I haven't. But you know, it's just like anything else, you just keep believing in yourself and believing in what you have to say and not letting the bastards get you down. I mean, what choice do you have?
Yeah. You've, from your professional career, you've always mostly been the person being interviewed, like you are now. But you've also done podcasts, and you've been able to question luminaries like Joan Baez. Talk about that. How did that sort of stretch your creativity to sort of reverse roles, if you will?
Well, it's, I mean, I have so much respect for people in your position, in your chair. It's not easy to get the truth out of people, you know, in a short amount of time. 'Cause it's scary to talk about things, and it's scary to ask questions, and it's all those things. And we all want to come across as intelligent and, you know, well-read and certainly able to speak to our guests on the other side of the microphone in a way that will be illuminating to the listeners. But I'm a talker. So maybe that helps me, I don't know. But I've known Joan since I was 16 years old, and that's a whole nother story. But she has been someone I work with. She's recorded a few of my songs. She's been so gracious in giving me time to talk with her and to learn from her and to be inspired by her in on stage, across from a microphone, in person. She's a jewel.
Well, so are you, and you will be performing at the Hayden Holmes Amphitheater in Bend, Oregon on June 27th. We've been speaking with Mary Chapin Carpenter. Really a joy talking to you. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Michael, such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we're back. I'm Michael Dunn, and you're listening to Oregon on the Record. Now let's check in with our reporter about the on-again, off-again parade for Eugene Pride. Julia Bobach, reporter for us here at KLCC. Julia, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Boy, kind of the local story of the day right now is the Pride Parade. Talk about your coverage of what you found out between Eugene Pride, between the police, sort of what's going on.
Yes, so Eugene Pride announced on Sunday that they were canceling their march and rally, not to be confused with the event as a whole. There's still a festival and everything, which is important to know about and remember and go see. But yes, their rally in March, which has been going on for years, starting at Casey Square, was canceled due to some unwillingness to work with the Eugene Police Department on permitting, which kind of sprouted from a distrust in the police department to keep the event safe, keep the rally safe, and keep the people participating in the rally safe, especially after a little bit of counter-protesting last year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this. This didn't come out of nowhere. There were some tension last year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and they specifically talked about last year, as well as protests in protest rallies and marches in the Eugene community that are unrelated directly to Pride, but to other issues that are important to the community, and the fact and EPD's potential involvement in those, and EPD's support of other possibly unpermitted protests and things like that. So it's definitely not completely unfounded, and they had their concerns about working with the police to create a safe environment. There is going to be another rally, unpermitted, kind of unofficial, although it was posted on the Eugene Pride social media, that's going to occur essentially when the rally in March would have occurred.
Okay.
And EPD, Police Chief Chris Skinner did say that EPD would be there in the vicinity of that rally just to make sure that everything's okay, but because they're unable to plan ahead through the permitting process, he said that it would kind of be a game time sort of decision on intervention, and if things kind of come up, then they can. But people might be confused about why certain streets are closed and certain areas are inaccessible, and so that was kind of his concern with a lack of prior notice.
What did the police tell you about the fact that Eugene Pride had said they don't trust the police, and so they were canceling the official rally in March? What did EPD tell you?
Yeah, so an EPD spokesperson, Melinda McLaughlin, mentioned in a statement to us that EPD had been in contact with the organization. Chief Skinner mentioned, you know, we being the police department, kind of expected to have another situation similar to last year where we worked together and were able to permit the rally and let it happen officially and be prepared for it. But it seems like what EPD is saying is that they're focused on safety. They still want the rally in March, despite the fact that it's unpermitted. And PD said that on a technicality, the people that are at this march and rally will be engaging in unpermitted behavior, but that they're not there to just go out and arrest people for being at this event. You know, First Amendment still exists and things like that. So
sure.
Chief Skinner was definitely talking about, you know, the police will be at the rally and at the march. They will be keeping watch from a distance, as he said. And if there is need, if there's conflict, they will be there to make themselves available to keep everyone safe, but not in a way that they were able to last year through the permitting process.
Okay. Julie, my last question for you is this. You know, from Eugene Pride's perspective, is this sort of isolated with the Eugene Police Department, or did they talk about, because of the sort of the the tenor and the tone in the nation right now that they felt like this was a particularly troubling time to do a parade or march?
It's different now in that people are able to display their pride in a way that they haven't been able to in previous years. Okay. And of course, as we're seeing in the nation, it's difficult to rally and march in for a lot of different reasons and in a lot of different ways. But he kind of flipped that sort of question on its head and talked about how important it is to have events like these because people are able to do this and celebrate with each other, show queer joy with each other. And he specifically talked about, you know, seeing young people coming to these events and feeling free to be themselves for the first time, hold someone's hand for the first time. And so I think that's kind of another way of looking at it is that Eugene Pride is specifically in this moment trying to find a place to fight against what national ideals might be trying to impede on, and instead using, you know, this month, this moment to show queer love and queer joy in Eugene in a safe way. And that seems like it's the priority on both sides.
She's Julia Bobach, reporter for us here at KLCC. Julia, thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, we'll talk with ham radio operators in our region and hear why this is not just a hobby, but a vital link in communications during a community-wide disaster. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.